Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are cracking open a book that's really shifted how people talk about identity these days. Mm-hmm. It's Katherine Bond Stockton's Genders. Mm-hmm. And if you've been trying to, you know, keep up with all the language around gender, maybe feeling a bit lost, this deep dive might just be the shortcut you need.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's important to say this isn't just about, like, learning new labels for identities. Stockton goes way deeper.
Right.
She's asking this really fundamental question, what even is gender? Forget the simple binary. Forget even just a spectrum. Her book is, well, it's a pretty radical challenge to how we usually think about it.
And it's fascinating because the whole core idea is kind of hidden in plain sight. Mm. Right there in the title, gender, in parentheses.
Exactly.
When I first saw that, I honestly thought, is that a typo? What's
yeah.
the little fails to it?
That is everything. It's her central point. Stockton argues that gender isn't some stable, fixed thing you just are.
Okay.
It's fundamentally plural, it's dynamic, often contradictory, so mm-hmm. that it signals multiplicity. Not just, you know, that there are many genders out there in society, uh-huh. but that multiplicity exists within each of us. You, me, everyone, we all contain gender plural.
Wow. Okay. So this deep dive then is really about equipping you, the listener, with some tools to navigate that complexity, moving beyond those rigid boxes we often use.
Precisely. It's about sparking those aha moments, showing that the complexity, the messiness of identity isn't some weird exception. It's actually the norm. And maybe it's kind of beautiful.
All right. Well, let's talk about the person who gave us this intellectual hand grenade, as you put it.
Yeah.
Who is Katherine Bond Stockton?
She's a big deal in academic circles, a distinguished professor of English, and she was also the associate vice president for equity and diversity at the University of Utah for a time. Her work sits right at the intersection of queer theory, gender studies, and critical race theory. Really influential stuff.
But what makes her voice stand out?
Mm.
Because academic writing can sometimes be dense.
Right. But that's what's different here. Her scholarship is super sophisticated, no doubt. But her writing style, it's often lyrical, almost poetic, sometimes quite personal, too.
That's refreshing.
Yeah, she avoids just throwing around jargon. She makes these really complex, heavy ideas feel accessible, even if you're just curious and not, you know, deep in PhD land.
I noticed in her previous work, she introduced this idea of growing sideways. That phrase really stuck with me. Can you unpack that a bit? How does it shape her thinking?
Growing sideways. Yeah, it's a powerful concept. It basically describes a way of developing, of living, that consciously pushes back against the sort of standard expected life path.
You mean like the typical grow up, get married, have kids, follow the rules kind of thing?
Exactly that linear trajectory. Growing sideways is about validating all the other ways people live and develop the non-normative experiences, identities, relationships that don't fit neatly on that straight line.
So it's not just about being different. It's about saying those different paths are just as valid, just as rich.
Precisely. And this ties into why her analysis is so powerful.
Yeah.
It's intensely intersectional. For Stockton, you just cannot analyze gender on its own.
Right.
She insists it's always intertwined with race, with class, with capitalism. These aren't separate boxes that occasionally bump into each other. They actively shape and create each other constantly.
That connection feels crucial. Okay, so if that's the author's perspective, let's get into the book's core argument. We often hear that simple phrase, sex is biological, gender is social.
Yeah.
How does Stockton kind of blow that up?
She starts by asking us to rethink the word gender itself. Stop thinking of it as a noun, like a fixed thing you possess.
Okay, not a noun.
Instead, think of it as a verb, a process, something you do, a constant becoming. It's about energy, movement, not a static label.
Noun to verb. I like that. It's a helpful shift. And she takes the reader on this journey towards what she calls confusion. That's a very deliberate word choice, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely deliberate. It plays on two meanings. Yes, it can mean confusion, that feeling of uncertainty when someone's identity doesn't fit neatly into your categories. We've all felt that.
Sure.
But more importantly, she emphasizes the withfusion part, mm-hmm. meaning a coming together, a blending. All of our identities are actually a fusion of different bits and pieces, body parts, personal histories, clothes we wear, memories, our economic situation.
All mixed together.
Exactly. And embracing that fusion, that mix, that's really the heart of the book's project. It's not about eliminating confusion, but seeing the fusion within it.
So if we lean into that confusion, where do we land? It's clearly not going to be a neat, tidy definition of gender.
Definitely not. we arrive somewhere closer to appreciating what she calls the dark shimmer.
Dark shimmer. Okay, that sounds poetic.
It is. It's maybe her most evocative term. The dark shimmer is like the lively, untamed, raw spark of being alive that the category gender tries to name but can never fully contain.
Like the energy that slips through the cracks of our labels.
Exactly. It's the vitality that's always more than our attempts to categorize it.
Okay, so the book uses this framework, the S, confusion, the shimmer, to look at identity across different areas, right? Which gives us a kind of map for the next part of our chat.
Yep. She covers multiplicity itself, then money and class, race and history, the connection to biological sex, and even brings in the non-human world.
Let's start right there. With gender itself, that's S in confusion, the main point is that gender is fundamentally plural, internally plural.
Right. So using genders isn't just saying, oh, there are lots of genders out there. It's saying that no single person is ever just one gender.
Even someone who identifies clearly as, say, a man or a woman.
Even then, you're still a fusion, right? A mix of culturally coded masculine and feminine traits, personal experiences, how society sees you, how you see yourself. It's an accumulation of parts.
Yeah.
And that anxiety we sometimes feel when someone's gender seems unclear or illegible.
Yeah.
Stockton suggests that anxiety comes from being forced to confront the confusion that actually exists in all of us. If we're all, in her sense, confused blends, then maybe that discomfort is really a fear of seeing our own internal multiplicity reflected back at us.
That reframes things quite a bit. Internal contradictions aren't a bug, they're a feature.
Yeah.
But you mentioned intersectionality is key. How does this dynamic idea of gender connect back to, well, the real world? Let's talk money. Gender by class and race.
Yeah.
Gender by color.
Yeah, she's very clear on this. Uh-huh. You can't grasp your gender without looking at your wallet. Gender is deeply classed. Your economic situation drastically shapes your ability to express your gender or to transition if that's part of your journey.
So money buys.
Yeah.
Expression.
Yeah.
Or conformity.
Both, potentially. Wealth can buy you access to things that help you conform to societal expectations if you want. Or it can buy you the freedom and resources to live outside those norms.
That makes a lot of sense. We often see these very visible transitions of wealthy celebrities.
And Stockton contrasts that directly. Think about someone like Caitlyn Jenner, who had immense resources for a very public, socially legible transition, access to top surgeons, hormones, legal help, media platforms. That gets presented almost as the standard path.
Right.
But then contrast that with the reality for many poor or working class trans folks. Their experience is often defined by precarity, struggling to access basic health care, let alone gender affirming care, facing housing insecurity, job discrimination. Their ability to do their gender is massively constrained by lack of money.
That connection between gender and class immediately brings race into focus too, doesn't it? If wealth shapes expression, then the history of denying wealth, denying even personhood, must be tangled up in how we even define gender today.
Absolutely fundamental. Stockton argues very forcefully that our modern Western ideas of man and woman were literally forged through colonialism and slavery.
Oh, so?
Historically, whiteness was constructed as the default, the unmarked, normal gender. Everyone else was measured against that standard and often found lacking.
So the definition itself is racially loaded from the very beginning.
Precisely. She draws heavily on Black feminist thinkers, especially their analysis of the ungendering of enslaved people.
Ungendering?
Yeah. The way enslaved individuals were systematically stripped of the social status and protections associated with being considered a man or a woman in the dominant white society.
Right.
They were reduced to property, to labor power, to flesh.
Wow.
So Stockton's point is stark. Any theory of gender that doesn't grapple with this history, that ignores race, it's not a universal theory of gender at all. It's, at best, a theory of white gender.
That's a really powerful critique. Okay, so gender is shaped by class, shaped by race. Mm. What about biological sex? That's still the bedrock for many people, the one thing that feels fixed.
And Stockton comes right at that in the chapter, Sex, Gender's Relation. Her core argument is that sex itself isn't some raw, objective, biological fact delivered straight from nature. It's also interpreted. It's organized through our cultural ideas about gender. It's not a simple binary bedrock. It's more like a constellation of biological features that we then sort into boxes.
And what's the clearest evidence for that interpretation aspect?
Well, the existence of intersex people is undeniable proof right there. Their bodies, combinations of chromosomes, hormones, internal and external organs simply don't fit neatly into the male-female binary. Biology itself is more diverse than our categories allow.
And yet, historically, medicine often tried to force the fit, didn't it?
Exactly. She discusses the history of the medical establishment performing so-called corrective surgeries on intersex infants, often without their future consent. This demonstrates pretty clearly how sex itself is often literally constructed or altered to align with pre-existing gender norms, rather than sex dictating gender. She references the history of sexology, including the work of John Money and the tragic David Reimer case, which starkly showed the dangers and failures of trying to surgically enforce a gender category onto a body that didn't align naturally.
It really highlights the human cost of insisting on that strict binary. Okay, that brings us to the final piece, which sounds the most philosophical, Animal Dark Shimmer, Gender Surround. How does she take gender beyond just humans?
It's fascinating. She suggests we draw on the world around us to perform gender using concepts like animal drag.
Animal drag. Like,
think about human behaviors described in animal terms like peacocking, you know, showing off to attract attention or a mate, or adopting certain postures or styles we associate with animals. We also project our gendered ideas onto pets, onto objects. It suggests gender isn't just human, it leaks out, it's environmental.
So it's not just contained within human society, it's almost like an energy we borrow from or see in the wider world.
And that leads right back to the dark shimmer. If gender is this plural, dynamic thing shaped by class and race, not strictly tied to biology, and even extends beyond the human, then maybe gender is just our word, or maybe clumsy human attempt to name and organize this raw, vibrant energy of existence itself. The shimmer is that untamable quality of life that our categories always point towards but can never fully capture. It's an invitation to awe, really.
Wow. That's a lot to absorb. Let's try and distill this down. What are the absolute key themes listeners should take away from Stockton's work?
Okay, theme one. Intersectionality is non-negotiable. We saw it over and over. Gender, money, class, race, they aren't separate lanes that sometimes cross. They're constantly weaving together, co-constituting each other. You need a structural view, not just individual stories.
Got it. And theme two, gender is a verb, not a noun. Remember that shift. It's an ongoing action, a performance, a creative expression lived out day by day. It's not some fixed thing hiding inside you. Identity becomes a project, not a discovery.
Theme three, embrace the confusion. That feeling of messiness or contradiction isn't a sign you're getting it wrong. Stockton argues it's actually an insightful state. It reveals the complex fusion of parts that makes up all identities. So leaning into the questions is productive.
Don't run from the confusion. And lastly,
theme four, growing sideways is valid. Celebrating those non-normative paths, the connections and ways of being that don't fit the standard expected life story. It's about defining fulfillment and development on your own terms.
Those are great summaries. Stockton also has this knack for phrasing things in ways that really stick with you, right? Mm-hmm. Let's share a few key quotes or ideas.
Yeah, she really does. Okay, first, the foundational one on multiplicity. We should think of gender not as gender, but as genders. The S in parentheses is a reminder that gender is always plural, a confusion of parts, histories, and possibilities. That really is the map for the whole book.
Sets the stage perfectly. Then, grounding it in reality. You cannot understand your gender without understanding your bank account. No. The freedom to be yourself is often a luxury good.
That one hits hard. It forces that economic lens, which often gets sidelined in purely cultural chats about identity.
Definitely. And finally, that powerful ethical point about history. The modern concepts of man and woman were built on the back of the slave. To speak of gender without speaking of race is to tell, at best, a fraction of the story.
Yeah. That's the call for real, deep intersectionality. It's a moral demand, really.
So we've been on quite an intellectual journey here. How can people take these pretty profound ideas and actually, you know, apply them in their everyday lives?
Well, starting personally seems key. Personal reflection. Use that idea of confusion to be kinder to yourself.
How so?
When you feel those internal contradictions, maybe traditionally masculine feelings alongside feminine ones or conflicting desires, try seeing it not as a problem you need to fix, but as your natural multiplicity showing itself. Maybe let go of needing to sit perfectly into one box.
Be okay with the internal and rather than either. I like that.
Exactly. And this is super relevant for parenting and education, too. Stockton's ideas give you a framework to create spaces where kids can explore who they are without feeling forced into rigid gender roles really early on.
So supporting their unique path, even if it looks like growing sideways.
Yeah, validating their journey rather than trying to steer them onto that single mainstream highway.
And then there's a bigger picture, right? Social and political analysis.
Definitely. Once you grasp that gender, money, and race are fundamentally linked, you become a much sharper reader of the news, of political debates, of media.
How does that help?
You can spot when issues like transphobia or misogyny are being treated in isolation, disconnected from economic injustice or racism. Understanding the connections allows you to push for more holistic structural solutions instead of just surface-level fixes. It builds a more sophisticated political awareness.
That makes sense. It connects the dots. So final thoughts. What's the biggest thing you're taking away from diving back into Gender S?
For me, honestly, it's the feeling of liberation that comes from embracing complexity. Stockton really dismantles the idea that the rigid male-female binary is some kind of natural law.
Yeah.
She shows it's a social construct, often a harmful one, that limits everyone, regardless of how they identify. Understanding gender as plural, as gender, feels like the first step towards a broader kind of freedom for everybody.
I love that. For me, the lasting insight is how it shifts the central question. It stops being, what are you?
Yeah.
Like, you need a definitive label.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it becomes something more like, how are you being shaped by the world around you? And how do you choose to live creatively within that shaping?
Mm-hmm.
It feels less like a test and more like an invitation to think more deeply, see more clearly.
A fantastic way to put it. It really does invite you to see with new eyes.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.